The news department of the National Broadcasting Company has kept a close watch on all of the developments today. We present a review of them now. Here first is Bill Fitzgerald, NBC News.
The events of this day move swiftly as the President of the United States put into action his decision to keep the Soviet Union and the communist island of Cuba from setting up an offensive military base aimed at this nation and this hemisphere. The most important development was the placing of the presidential signature on a formal proclamation tonight calling for a blockade of any and all arms bound for the island of Cuba. In other developments, the United States, Cuba, and the Soviet Union laid their cases before the United Nations Security Council. All three nations were given a chance to file their complaints against each other. The session went on for 5 hours and then adjourned to take up more debate on the Cuba question tomorrow morning. There were also decisions made by the Organization of American States in Washington and decisions by the Department of Defense. To begin this report of the day's developments, we call in first NBC's White House correspondent Ray Shearer in Washington.
The White House today went on a semi-war footing. It even got to the point where from now on the handbags of lady tourists will be searched and packages carried will be put under the X-ray machine. On the larger side of things, it was made known the president is meeting his top council of military, diplomatic, and intelligence advisors every morning 7 days a week. Tomorrow, there is to be another briefing for congressmen still in town, waiting to be told what is expected of them in the crisis. The most significant moment of this perhaps historic day came at 7 minutes after 7 tonight, when the president took up a pen and put his name to the Quarantine Proclamation, a 2-page document titled Interdiction of the Delivery of Offensive Weapons to Cuba. Here is a list of prohibited materials: surface-to-surface missiles, bombers, bombs, air-to-surface rockets and guided missiles, electronic equipment to support them. After 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, any ships carrying such materials will be turned back. If there is resistance, force shall be used, says the document, to the extent necessary. Ray Shearer speaking from the White House. Now for the latest from the Pentagon, here is Peter Hackett.
Secretary McNamara tonight froze all Navy and Marine Corps enlistments and officers' tours of duty for as long as 1 year if necessary to ensure enough personnel to carry out the quarantine program. The extensions will have the effect of increasing the Navy by 10,000 men each month and the Marine Corps by 2,400. Speaking on the record here tonight, McNamara said there are 25 Russian cargo ships now on the way to Cuba at this moment, several of which, he said, may be carrying such things as bombs, jet bombers, ballistic missiles, and other offensive weapons. Ships, he indicated, will have to be stopped. U.S. Navy skippers, he said, have specific orders to do whatever is necessary to stop these ships and to fire back if fired upon. The first intercept could come tomorrow. The CIA, meantime, is about to release 9 high-altitude reconnaissance pictures taken over Cuba, showing clearly several missile launchers aimed at the U.S. Peter Hackett, NBC News, Pentagon correspondent.
As expected, the Soviet Union reacted bitterly to the fact that the United States dared to intimate that the Russians were engaged in any collusion with Fidel Castro to set up bases in Cuba which threatened the safety of the United States and the Western Hemisphere. Moscow acted swiftly and pulled out all the propaganda stops. The Kremlin instituted emergency measures within the Soviet Union. All military leaves were canceled, and older workers were denied the right to leave any defense jobs. Moscow also called for the alert of all Warsaw Pact forces. There were mixed feelings in Western Europe over President Kennedy's decision to wait no longer to take positive action against the growing threat to this nation and this hemisphere being hatched by Nikita Khrushchev and Fidel Castro. Most of the response to the president's dramatic move was favorable, but there was some resentment. Here is NBC's senior European correspondent, Joseph C. Harsh, in London.
It was done more in duty than in joy under the accompaniment of a real riot in front of the American embassy, but the British government fell into step with Washington on Cuba today. After a full cabinet meeting, the Foreign Office issued a formal statement accusing Russia of deception and of opening a new area of instability. The British delegation at the United Nations is instructed to support the American resolution. Foreign Minister Lord Hume has declared in a televised speech that the Americans are right to let the world see plainly what is being done by the communists under their noses. These were the important things that happened here today, important because it would have been so easy for the government to take the other way out and go for fence-sitting or neutralism. The first public reaction this morning was sketched by newspaper editorials. Only one in the Tory Daily Express gave solid comfort and support to Washington. All others either wavered or criticized. There is much public anxiety. Everywhere people gathered in earnest little groups, the talk was always Cuba. Two people cheered. The stock market bumped down long and hard, and the price of gold soared. And never has there been a rougher, uglier riot in front of the American embassy than today. It lasted nearly 3 hours. At its peak, some 2,000 persons charged police lines, broke them, and nearly reached the glass front doors of the embassy. Casualties were cuts and bruises, not lives, but it proved how bitter is the left wing. Britain is moving with us, but it is a slow process, and there's plenty of angry minority opposition. This is Joseph C. Harsh, NBC News, London.
The eyes of the world were turned today toward the big glass United Nations building in New York. It was here where the United States, Cuba, and the Soviet Union laid their case before the nations of the world. Speaking for this country was our ambassador, Adlai Stevenson. He berated both Castro and Khrushchev in a speech that lasted over an hour. Mr. Stevenson called on the world body to act now on Cuba and halt what the United States charges is a vast plan by Soviet communism to win world domination by piecemeal aggression. Here is a part of Ambassador Stevenson's closing remarks.
We still hope, we still pray, that the worst may be avoided, that the Soviet leadership will call an end to this ominous adventure. Mr. President, I am submitting today a resolution to the Security Council designed to find a way out of this calamitous situation. This resolution calls, as an interim measure under Article 40 of the Charter, for the immediate dismantling and withdrawal from Cuba of all missile and other offensive weapons. It further authorizes and requests the Acting Secretary General to dispatch to Cuba a United Nations Observer Corps to assure and report on compliance with this resolution. Upon UN certification of compliance, it calls for the termination of the measures of quarantine against military shipments to Cuba. And in conclusion, it urgently recommends that the United States and the Soviet Union confer promptly on measures to remove the existing threat to the security of the Western Hemisphere and the peace of the world, and to report thereon to the Security Council. Mr. President, the issue which confronts the Security Council is grave. Were it not, I should not have detained you so long. Since the end of the Second World War, there has been no threat to the vision of peace so profound, no challenge to the world of the Charter so fateful. The hopes of mankind are concentrated in this room. The action we take may determine the future of civilization. I know that this Council will approach the issue with a full sense of our responsibility and a solemn understanding of the import of our deliberations. There is a road to peace. The beginning of that road is marked out in the resolution I have submitted for your consideration. If we act promptly, we will have another chance to take up again the dreadful questions of nuclear arms and military bases, and the means and causes of aggression and of war, to take them up and do something about them. This is a solemn, I believe, and significant day for the life of the United Nations and the hope of the world community. Let it be remembered not as the day when the world came to the edge of nuclear war, but is the day when men resolved to let nothing thereafter stop them in their quest for peace. Thank you, sir.
Following Ambassador Stevenson's denunciation of both the Soviet Union and the communist government of Fidel Castro, there was a pause of about an hour while Mr. Stevenson's remarks were translated into French. Then came the Cuban ambassador, Dr. Mario Garcia Inchastigua, who ranted for another hour. In a voice that broke on several occasions, he accused the United States of all types of provocations against the Cuban people and their government. And he called the United States quarantine an act of war. The Cuban ambassador wound up his speech like this as we hear the English translation.
The representative of the United States has the shamelessness, and I'm sorry to have to use such a word, sir, the shamelessness to refer here to the background and the history of the United States in its relations with the Latin American community in the last 150 years. A history of pillage and depredation, of violation, of interventions, a history of confiscation of territory and of domination could not ever have been written by any empire in the history of humanity. Well, the American blockade against our country is an act of war. It is the use of force by a great power against the independence of our home. It is a criminal act violating the charter and the principles of our organization. We shall resist those illegal measures of North American imperialism. The reply of our people and our government to the imminent armed attack of the United States has been general mobilization. Mr. President, members of the Council, we request the Security Council, on behalf of and for the sake of the Charter and of international morality, and for the sake of the principles of law, we appeal for the immediate withdrawal of the aggressive forces of the United States from the coasts of Cuba and the cessation of the illegal blockade unilaterally adopted by the government of the United States, thus showing contempt for the Charter. We ask for the immediate withdrawal of all troops, ships, and planes sent to our shores. We seek the cessation of these provocative acts in Guantanamo and of the piratical attacks organized by agents at the service of the government of the United States. We ask for a cessation of all interventionist measures adopted and taken by the government of the United States interfering in the domestic affairs of Cuba, and the cessation of all violations of our air and sea spaces.
After a 60-minute condemnation of the United States by Cuba, it was Russia's turn. Speaking for the Soviet Union was its chief delegate, Valerian Zorin, who ironically is chairman of the Security Council this month. Zorin wasted no time echoing the words of his Cuban colleague. He said President Kennedy's blockade of Cuba is a reckless act which brings the world to the brink of a thermonuclear war. Here is a translation of part of Zorin's speech.
The Soviet government, only today, in its official statement, which was circulated to members of the Council, once again declared the following, and I quote, "As far as the assistance of the Soviet Union to Cuba, that assistance pursues solely purposes of cooperation in and assistance to the defensive capability of Cuba. As was pointed out on the 3rd of September of this year in the joint Soviet-Cuban communique on the presence in the Soviet Union of a delegation of Cuba consisting of Guevara and Aragonés, the Soviet government went to meet the request of the Cuban government on the giving of military assistance to Cuba. In the communique, it is stated that this armament and the military material is designed solely for defensive purposes. The governments of both countries are firmly on that position at the present time as well. The need for Soviet assistance in the strengthening of Cuban defenses is brought about by the fact that the Cuban Republic, from the first few days of its existence, was subjected to continual threats and provocations on the part of the United States.
It was a day of long speeches at the United Nations, with the United States pitted against both the Soviet Union and the Communist government of Cuba. The chamber of the Security Council had few empty seats as the charges and countercharges resounded throughout the afternoon and into the night. NBC's Leon Pearson has been there through it all. We call on him now to give us a summation of the day's developments in the United Nations headquarters.
At the Security Council, the passions were aroused today. The attendance was greater than I've ever seen it, especially among delegates who deserted the General Assembly Hall to hear the debate on a question which they all seem to feel holds the possibilities of war. There were only the three principal speeches, but all were long and full of grave charges. Ambassador Adlai Stevenson for the United States with an eloquent review of Soviet and Cuban policies. Ambassador Mario Garcia Inchaustegui for Cuba and Ambassador Valerian Zorin for the USSR. Certainly the prize for passion went to the Cuban. He tore a passion to tatters. But he left no doubt about the resolute position of his government, saying, "We shall die fighting rather than permit the Yankees to dominate us, and we reject completely any inspection of our territory as proposed in the U.S. resolution, and the American blockade is an act of war." The gravest charge was made by the Soviet delegate, Valerian Zorin, when he said, "The United States has openly embarked on the course of destroying the United Nations and unleashing a world war." And then, speaking of the U.S. blockade, he said, "No self-respecting state will permit interference with its shipping." Here, of course, lies the substance of the whole matter, regardless of what resolutions pass or do not pass. The U.S. resolution calling for the dismantling of missiles on Cuban soil will be vetoed by the Soviet delegate. He said so tonight. And the Soviet and Cuban resolutions will be outvoted by a majority of the Council. These votes may come before the end of tomorrow's session. Leon Pearson, NBC News, United Nations correspondent.
While all of the haranguing was going on at the United Nations, another meeting was being held in Washington. This was the gathering of the Organization of the American States. These are the nations that, like the United States, would be the direct targets of any attack launched by a Soviet-backed Cuba. There was little hesitation on the part of the Latin American nations to support President Kennedy in his action against Fidel Castro. They voted approval 19-0 with one abstention. NBC correspondent Robert Gorowski spent most of the day at this conference. Here is his report from Washington.
The U.S. government recognizes that its actions against Cuba are far more effective if supported by the nations of Latin America. This was one of the reasons President Kennedy called for an emergency meeting of the Organization of American States to meet the threat of Cuba and communism to the Western Hemisphere. Latin American support is essential. If Castro and Khrushchev know that it's not the United States alone that is distressed by developments in Cuba, that they'll be more impressed by our grave view of the situation than the OAS is a responsible area for us and the communist world as well. The OAS acted promptly. They met this morning, and Secretary of State Dean Rusk led the U.S. delegation in the small but grand Council Hall of the OAS. Secretary of State Rusk introduced two resolutions. The first was procedural. The second, of substance, had called for the immediate dismantling and withdrawal from Cuba of all missiles and other weapons with any offensive capability. It urged all the states of the OAS to use whatever means necessary, including armed force, to cut off further supplies of communist military materiel to Cuba. There were few moments of debate. Brazil questioned whether some time limit might not be set on dealing with preventing communist Cuban missiles from becoming an active threat to peace and security. But Brazil accepted the majority's will on an amendment vote. The single abstention was Uruguay because poor communications prevented its delegation from receiving instructions from Montevideo. Thus, the U.S. won a major diplomatic victory. Not a single negative vote against hemispheric action to prevent more missiles and arms for Castro. Secretary Rusk thanked the delegates for their swift and overwhelming vote of confidence. Individual states of the OAS will now report to the organization on what steps they have taken to implement the resolution. The U.S. will, of course, bear the brunt of responsibility, but its task is made easier with this vote of confidence from the OAS. Robert Gorowski, NBC News, Washington.
And there is this late development just in on the Cuban situation tonight. Premier Castro has told the Cuban people that the United States arms blockade of Cuba is, in his words, the most dangerous adventure since the end of World War II. In his first public reaction to the blockade, Castro said tonight the U.S. took the step because it had failed in all other attempts to crush the Cuban Revolution. The Cuban leader told his people in a nationwide broadcast that a life and death struggle is underway between an empire and the revolution of a small and weak people. Thus went this day, the first full day following President Kennedy's announcement that this nation would no longer tolerate the obvious dangerous military buildup by the combined communist forces of Russia and Cuba. There have been no actual showdowns yet, but they may come shortly. To review the day's developments, President Kennedy has signed a formal proclamation setting up a blockade of all arms bound for Cuba. American ships will stop all vessels in the area beginning tomorrow morning. The vessels will be searched, and if they refuse to stop and refuse to admit our boarding parties, they then will be sunk. Following 5 hours of debate in the United Nations, where the cases of the United States, Cuba, and Russia were heard in the Security Council, that body adjourned until tomorrow morning, when it will again take up the charges and the countercharges. This may drag on for several days. And the Organization of American States, representing those nations who would be direct targets of an attack from Cuba, overwhelmingly approved the action of President Kennedy to stop the joint Soviet-Cuban military conspiracy. It has been a day packed with action and drama. There probably will be many, many more. Bill Fitzgerald, NBC News, New York.
For the last half hour, NBC News has presented a special program covering the day's developments in the Cuban crisis. May we suggest that as these tense events continue to unfold, you stay tuned to your NBC station for complete and comprehensive coverage. This program was a presentation of NBC News, produced by Ken Brodney, directed by Daniel Field. This is NBC.